Welcome back, everyone. It's another episode of the Steel Target Paint Podcast. I'm Jeff Jones, and driving on his way to work today is my best friend and partner in this podcast. Steve, how you doing this morning?
Jeff, I'm doing amazing. You know what makes today so amazing?
Tell me, sir. Tell me.
Man, last night I got notification from JP Enterprises of my new baby. It's on its way.
What are we getting? What are we getting now? I mean, we already have a JP5. Are we getting another one? You got a JP22. You're getting another one. Let's tell us.
I'm not trying to flex, but I will. I already got two JP5s. But what is in this box is a JP5 with a side charging handle with the new elusive ultra lightweight barrel.
Wow.
I can't wait to shoot it. Can't wait to shoot it.
So it's interesting too, because I have a side charging handle adapter for my JP22.
Yeah.
That is extremely handy in I shoot that gun a lot when I shoot our zombie match. USPSA style type match, but it allows the 22s. So it's a perfect opportunity to shoot that gun. And that comes in very handy, with that. What's your opinion? I mean, I think it's a nice feature, for that. I don't know if it helps much in steel.
No, I think it's a multifaceted gun. Yeah, it's certainly convenient.
Extreme convenience, there's no doubt.
Yeah, there are pros and cons to it. The pro is definitely it's convenient to use. It's easy to cycle and manipulate the bolt and all that kind of stuff. There are two downsides, to be very transparent, because I'm a pretty transparent kind of guy.
You're playing a lot of tennis, so you're getting skinnier too. So that transparency is getting even more so.
Man, I'm telling you, Jeff, I could barely walk this morning. I played for 3 hours last night. These guys are like, oh, just one more. So I played 5 sets last night. I'm like, you guys are killing me. But the two downsides are number one, the cost. It's a couple hundred. I don't have the price sheet in front of me, but it's probably $300-$400, maybe even $500 more for the side charging handle. So that's one of the downsides. Certainly it's not required. The other, what could be a downside to some and maybe an upside to another, is it's a couple ounces heavier on the receiver. It's a little bit, I think it maybe just a dash taller, so again, I don't have it in front of me, maybe right, 3-4 ounces heavier. Some people look at that to a downside, and some look at it as an upside. But GMR 15s, all of them have side charge handles on it. I don't know. I just I prefer it. So I had them do something for me outside of I can't talk about that one thing they did for me. But the other thing is they didn't finish it for me.
It's a family show, Steve. It's a family show.
No, they didn't put the Teflon coating on, and so I'm going to refinish it. And I've got some ideas of what I want to do to it. I don't know. We'll see. You see that cartoon? Do you see the cartoon one that I did?
I did. That was awesome.
The 2245?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty slick. Man. So that gun is actually going to be that's going to be featured at Metal Badness. So if you want to check it out, it's going to be at Metal Badness here in, I don't know, what's that, 10 weeks away, something like that, at the homecoming match. So, I'm not sure if I'm going to do that or I'll leave it a little bit open, but exploring some other finishing type services. So working on a couple of those things right now. I don't want to share too much until we get things perfected and offer it, but I'm excited, man. I'm like a little kid in a candy store. And you know what else is exciting too?
What's
You know what
that?
else is exciting?
What else is exciting?
Man, it's taken a lot longer than I would like, but I got notification last night that my anodized new 2245 extended base pads are in route. So
Ah,
I have,
yes. I saw
yeah.
the you had the prototypes down at West Florida, and they are nice. There is no doubt about that. So them getting anodized, you're going to be able to. Now, are you planning on offering them as one color, or are people going to be able to get a multitude of colors, or haven't you decided yet?
To start with, I work with a couple of partners that are in anodizing. The main person that's done the majority of my anodizing, they had some issues going on, not with the quality of anodizing or anything like that, but they had some issues with the company that they were working with to their resources to anodize. So they worked at a place and they were allowing them to anodize for the last 10 years in their shop, and something happened there. I'm not sure if the other shop closed or something, but he's temporarily out of business, and so I had to spend some time to find some other partners to do anodizing and stuff like that. So, and I've also got something kind of cool. I showed Jeff. I hate this. So I've been working on polishing and all that kind of stuff, because if you want a nice anodized finish, not saying that you can't anodize something that's a matte finish or that's got a texture on it, and still look good. Yeah, it will look good, but I think a lot of us like the higher polish stuff. So whatever you anodize something, whatever the finish you start with is kind of what you end up with. So I posted a reel probably, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, where I high polished a little quartz in Mamba X. And so it's pretty, yeah, that's en route to me right now as well. So I'll get that put together next week. I made the mistake. That was supposed to be for me, Jeff. I made the mistake of posting it out, or showing somebody that came over to my house from out of state. And so
It's
I
not going to
think
be
that
yours anymore. You're gonna have to make another one, right?
that's pretty much where this is heading. This is that. The part with that is I was showing them, and I'm like, it's so expensive, and I don't want it to be too expensive because I want people to be able to afford it. But the guy that I work with on machining my parts and whatnot, I've always liked a little bit of a heavier gun, Jeff, and so I had him prototype. I've got two sets of grips and magwells that are in solid brass. Oh my gosh, they look like they're solid gold. They're 15.3 ounces, and I put one on my Flame Mamba X iron sight gun that I've got. Dude, the front sight doesn't even move when you pull the trigger because it's got that extra weight there. Oh my goodness.
So
Oh.
speaking of that gun, I'm going to be shooting RFPI at Worlds this year,
Yep.
and I'm pretty sure the gun's going to go down. Can I borrow yours?
Well, when are you shooting? I'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'll let you shoot it.
I am shoot. What am I shooting? You know what? I think I've got RFPI on Thursday. I was joking, but anyways, that
I'll
was
ship. I'll ship it to you. You can shoot
I love
it.
it. I love it. Yeah, I mean, I shoot a 6-inch VQ right now. So there wouldn't be any change. Actually learned something very important last night
Talk to me.
about it. I was talking with Adam Reno
Yep.
because he shoots a lot of RFPI. And I just asked him, I said, what front sight are you using on that gun? Because I have the standard high vis that comes with it with a little pop in front sight. You know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
The fiber just, it's a preformed piece, you just pop it in. And it seemed really big to me. And so I talked with Adam and he said, no, I just use the standard one, but he doesn't use the insert. So I looked at it and of course I have a bunch of different size fibers. So I was like, I'm cutting this out. Well, long story short, I changed it to just a standard length of fiber, cut to the right length with a little heat, press it flat, and it turned out to be more in tune with the size that I'd like. So I think it's just a way that they make those inserts, that front piece of it is just very, very fat.
The other part, I'm pretty sure Adam shoots red. The other thing to talk about real briefly, because I saw a lot of the Mamba Ironside guns, and I would say 90% of them, this is just what I recommend. And everybody's, tomato, tomato, and people like different colors and all that kind of stuff. I'd say 90% of the ones that I sell actually have the red fiber in the front. They come in with like that greenish yellow kind of color, and if you shoot the Hunter's HD Gold Ruby, it's a little bit tougher to see. Whereas if you throw a red in there, it pops out like a signal flare on the side of the road. So
Oh, most definitely.
keep that in mind as you're if you don't shoot a lot of Ironside and you want to shoot an Ironside, that's my recommendation, especially if you have a Hunter's HD Ruby. And that's one of the reasons why I shoot the rubies, is it accentuates all the red and pick up the dots and a little bit quicker. And same thing with the front sights.
Yeah, for me too, it's also just I've always shot a red front sight, and I'm not against a green. If you like green, that's great. I shoot somewhere between well, I guess on the Seymours it would be a six or an eight. On some of the other dots, they'll say it's a three and it looks like an eight. They all seem to have varying size definitions, but what it actually looks like. I like a medium sized dot, if you will. When you start getting into 10s and 12s, for me they're just too big. And I don't like shooting the open circles. Again, it's not how I came up shooting red dots, and so I'm just so used to having a dot. Again, not against it. For some people, that probably works great. It's just not me. And that's kind of where the Hollow Sun, the new one, it's got what, seven or eight, even probably more, different configuration, different dot presentations you can show. And I think that's kind of a cool feature, and that you can start figuring out what's the one that best suits you. The one thing I always mention to people is I don't like to flare the dot. You know what I
Yeah,
mean by
like the
that?
yeah, we call it, I call it the sunburst or
Yeah,
starburst.
sunburst, starburst, yes, all of the above.
Hey, maybe it is a starburst, 'cause I'm getting kind of hungry. I like starburst, especially the red ones. Sorry for the aside, Jeff. Carry on.
That's great. No, I don't like I have got a lot of people, a lot of coaching students, where I'll grab their gun and their gun will be starburst, and I'll turn it down just a little and I'll just say, "Can you shoot this?" And sure enough they can, and it becomes, in my mind, it becomes less obtrusive and just more indicative of where the dot is.
Well, but one thing back to Adam, I don't want to share all of his secrets, but one of the things that him and I've talked about a decent amount in the past is he loves a grippy, like cut your hand type of grip. Like it's not even I'm not trying to create one that's sharp enough for him, because he likes to grip the gun really, really, really hard. And I think, and he didn't share this, but my perception of that is the harder you grip the gun, of course, the less the dot and the front sight moves. And that's what I was going after, without, because I still like to enjoy my hands, and don't want them to bleed after I shoot. That's why I created the grips and magwell for the 2245, with the type of texture it is, it's, I think I haven't had a person say that it's uncomfortable to shoot, but yet it grips in your hand. Even if like even down to your match, it was pretty wet, and I shot that gun, and it didn't move it around at all. But that's the other intent around the brass, is the little extra weight on the brass, because that's one of my shooting tendencies, is that whenever I shoot a handgun, I don't know what it is. Even when I have Jeff on my shoulder say, "Hey, grip the gun, go one for one," I always loosen my grip just a little bit when I'm shooting. And it may not necessarily be just that string, but it could be as I progress, through the fourth or fifth string, depending on what stage I'm shooting. So the brass really, really helps. But man, the price point's gonna be it's gonna be pretty high. So I don't know. I may go to production with a handful of them and see what we can do. But it's one of those things. The price is already a decent amount higher than the aluminum. I think there's a small market for it. So I may produce some, but I've sold probably three sets of them. I don't even have three sets to sell. I just had two made, because of the cost. So I may make a few more. So if anybody's out there that thinks they want any of that in their life, drop me a note, and I'll get an order arranged to shoot them. But I'll have it with me, certainly at the World Speed Shoot, the Alabama State Steel Challenge match, and the Metal Madness homecoming that's coming up. And and then in Area 2 in August, you see Kurt and Maria sold out
I
Area
did
2.
see the
That's
post. Yes.
nuts.
Yep.
470 guns, I think Kurt was saying.
It's
And
amazing.
his
It's.
waiting list is actually pretty darn long. One of the things that Kurt was telling me is that a lot of the local guys aren't used to, those matches like selling out that quick. So I think he's got a lot of local people that didn't sign up when the sign up happened. So I think he's
Right.
got a pretty significant waiting list. So hopefully he can work that out. I don't know if he's going to add any more days or anything like that. And of course, we see a World Speed Shoot and other matches, life happens. So some people have to drop out. But if you're interested in going that match, I highly encourage you to get on the waiting list. Hopefully something changed, but in my opinion, that will be the premier match of this year. Not dissing the World Speed Shoot, because it is a world level match, but in terms of fun, and where else are you gonna have ice cream and root beer floats? I'm just saying, Jeff. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm wondering, is he, I'd heard rumors that, they really invested in like a people mover where you don't actually even have to walk between the stages. You just get on a people mover and it just moves you to the next stage because he cares so much about the shooters.
I heard that if you're flying in from Georgia, you get foot massages between stages. That's what I heard.
That yes, in fact, if you look at the sign-up sheet, the sign-up page on Practice Score, there's an addendum. There's a little star down at the bottom that states that. So, oh, that's great. Well, yes, congratulations to Kurt on that. As a fellow match director, that's what you want to do is you want to bring the match to the biggest amount of people. So they can enjoy it. And so, congratulations to him on that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and the other cool part I think that people like is, I remember back when I was started shooting quote unquote competitively back in 2016, is there was a couple of matches that had some significant prize tables, and we really haven't seen that the last couple of years. It's kind of, the World Speed Shoot does a decent job, but Kurt's match, oh my goodness, I can't remember what the average value per competitor was, but it was at least 250, if not $500. So
Wow.
somewhere in that range. And it's unless if he changes it, it's a random draw. So you get a ticket when you check in, and then he gives back to the shooter. So he does a Lewis class payout system. So you've got an equal chance to win, $1,000 or something or another in a random draw at the check-in. And you can make some money shooting. So
Nice, nice.
yeah, it's a cool deal.
All right, well, Let's get into the meat of what I wanted to talk about today and share with our listeners, and that is the addendum to the new rules for Steel Challenge. Did you know there were new rules?
Yeah, somebody told me and said, "Hey, Steve, let's do a podcast and go through the new rules of Steel Challenge." I said,
See,
"What?
this is why we
See?
do these things. So,
Yep."
there are some new ones. There's also some a lot of clarifications. So, I know you're driving, but we're just gonna I'll go through these and then we'll talk about them that need talking about. So, and I'm just gonna paraphrase these for everyone. No one wants to hear me talk too much, and everyone is now nodding their head. That's right, Jeff.
It's like you're in my car.
So the first one talks about it gets a very clear definition of what a bagged firearm is. And this clarifies something that has happened at ranges down here. And that is you're shooting, say, rimfire pistol iron, optic. You walk up, people are downrange, it's before the make ready command, and you unzipper, but do not open your bag. That is
So
a
let,
DQ.
yeah, to be specific though, unzipper the department where the gun is. If you
Correct. Yes, not where the
unzipper
mags
where
are.
the mags are,
That's
it's
correct.
fine.
Yes, you can do whatever
Yep.
you want with the mags, but yes, unzippering the part of the bag where the gun is, that would be considered a DQ. So, they make it very clear as to what a bagged gun is, and make it very clear, that would be, you have to wait for the make ready command. So, and that's good because, that's it would be it's an unfortunate thing to get DQ'd in any way, shape, or form, but to have it done like that, where with easily could be avoided, just by waiting until you hear make ready. So everybody, just wait till you hear make ready. The next one really only impacts centerfire shooters, and this is the new way of measuring the holster distance. Now, do you know what the current rule is?
Distance from the belt.
From the inner belt.
I think it's making it up inch and a half.
Right. I'm not sure what the size is. Usually we use the size of an overlay, although most people who only shoot Steel Challenge go, "What's an overlay?"
Exactly.
But there is a distance there, but it is now being measured from the outer belt.
Okay.
So you're going to gain, whatever the width of your outer belt is, if you choose to change your hanger. So that's just something that makes it a lot easier for an RO to test that. Now, more importantly, is what happens if it's deemed out of compliance. So at that point, if you walk up and I look and I go, "Hey, I'm going to measure that," and I measure it and it's too far out, as a range officer, I'm going to tell you may go adjust that. And
Okay.
you go make an adjustment and come back and get remeasured, or it looks right, everything's fine, and you shoot. If, let's say, for instance, you shoot roundabout and you finish roundabout, and then you go to showdown, and the RO in showdown goes, "That doesn't look right." And they measure it, and it's not. The penalties do not go retroactive. So any
Okay.
completed stage is done. Okay. And if you haven't shot any on showdown or on the next stage, of course, you haven't shot any, so they're not retroactive. You get it fixed, everything's good. The only time a procedural penalty would be applied is if you shot a string and then it was deemed something doesn't look right. So this is really something for people that are ROing shooters, especially at bigger matches. Do the shooters a favor, go through a check. Best thing to do is if every squad before the match starts does a quick check of shooters competitors where rules like this apply. So it tends to be more in the center fire realm
Right.
with regards to say a magwell on a carry optics gun. That's one that catches a lot of people. Now, interestingly enough, a compensator on all rimfire guns and PCCs, I believe, are. Well, I know for rimfire, it's legal because people would shoot the same gun and just pull the dot off and shoot iron sights.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure, and I would have to check for PCCI. But here's a good example. You shoot optical sight revolver, which has a compensator on it. Now, granted, it's a revolver compensator, so it's not like it's doing a whole lot, but it is still a compensator. And then you pull that dot off to shoot iron sights on the same gun. Have to remove the compensator.
Right.
So there are those are little things that as an RO you can help. Dan Huey, my range master for West Florida, put together a really nice sheet for the ROs to use before the squad started to just check it over. And it turns out that a lot of competitors were reading them and then they were checking their own equipment, which is fantastic. You know,
Yeah.
it's one of those things where the more information you can get out there, the better it is for everybody. So that's one. There is the next couple were just kind of rewords of rules regarding leaving the line, and the cases of how you can leave the line. So here's one: no contestant may le the new rule reads, no contestant may leave the firing line position until the firearm has been loaded, inspected, and cleared by the range officer. The firearm will then be holstered or placed in a protective case, sheath, or bag. Long guns must be carried from the line with a chamber flag in a case or bag or uncased with the muzzle up or down. Quite frankly, that rule, I believe, is the exact same, except they added up or down on the long guns.
Sure.
So that was pretty straightforward. Here's an interesting one that so if you're shooting in the same session, you're shooting open and rimfire pistol optic, and you walk up to the line and you're about to shoot your RFPO gun and you've got your center fire gun in your holster.
Yep.
Is that legal?
Today it is, or well, last week it was.
It is absolutely 100% legal. Now, you're shooting RFPO, and it's always been legal. It's always been part of the rules.
Not a
Now you're
good
shooting.
idea, though. Not
Not
a
a
good
good
idea,
idea.
though,
Right,
especially
right.
if you're shooting outer limits, but carry on.
So, same situation, except instead of open, you're shooting PCCO. Before the rule, was it still legal?
Nice.
That's what we changed and what was changed. So it never actually called out long guns. So per exact of the rules, which are meant to be black and white, if you were shooting an open gun in a holster while you were shooting PCCO, that was a DQable offense.
Really?
Yes, because it wasn't in the rules that you could do that. And the rules specifically called out handgun.
Right.
So now it's fixed, so you can do it, so it's not a problem. It's more that was more of a rule change for clarification.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of, well, this one specifically, it's what was the intent around the
Exactly.
rule when
It
it was written, and
100%.
this
I don't
just
think
clarifies it. Yep.
I can't say for sure because it never happened. But I would have to believe that should someone have been brought to the range master or had the range master come down and say, well, this is a DQ because of this, I think they would have gone through a similar argument that that's not the intent. So, but now it doesn't, it's not even an issue. So, the next one, just a very simple one. They changed at tier 2 and 3 to at tier and higher. And that's just because World Speed Shoot's considered a tier 4 match. So that just has to deal with shooting back to back. And I think everybody understands the rule there. You can't shoot back to back. There must be a competitor in between your guns at level 2 or higher. The next couple just tried to clarify the definition of creeping and false start.
Controversy.
Well, creeping is moving at the buzzer, at the timer. Okay. As opposed to false start, which is moving before the timer goes off. So a creeping penalty would be applied is as I am beeping, you're moving. Which is very difficult for me to determine because there are some people who have a very quick reaction time. So it's very difficult there. False start is you see somebody moving before the beep. False start's easy. Just say stop, restart them, and go from there. So this is always these have always been tough, but they just clarified them a little bit where the creeping is at the start signal. So keep that in
So
mind.
let me
Yeah.
ask you this, Jeff. So how much movement of the gun is considered creeping?
Technically, in
Any?
my, if I were to read it black and white, any movement. Any movement would be considered creeping.
The only tough part that I have about that being in black and white is there are some folks that I personally shoot with that, let's just say, maybe just a little bit older and have a medical condition where they end up, they end up, shaking just a little bit. So technically, they'd be in violation of that rule. And what I
Yes.
mean by that is.
And technically, yes. And if you give them a creeping penalty, you are going to hell. Okay. I mean,
I'm with you
that's
100%. I'm with you
just,
100%.
I mean, again, I think that's one where it could be simply cleared up by at a level 1, there's always supposed to be someone identified as the range master. Call the range master over and say, just want to make a clarification. This person here, as they come to low ready due to their condition, they're not 100% stopped. I'm not going to be applying a creeping penalty. And if the range master, I believe, is worth their salt, they're going to look at you and go, yeah, duh, why are you wasting my time? You made the right call. They wouldn't say it that way, but my point is they would agree. Okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going with this. A lot of this stuff need to be sprinkled in with a little common sense too.
Yes,
so.
Again, the person's not actively trying to cheat. Creeping
That's correct.
is a actively trying to cheat, jump the buzzer, get that advantage. That person is not doing that, in my estimation.
But let me ask you a follow-up question about the false start. How many false starts do you get before you do something different?
It doesn't say. Me personally, if the person did it twice, I would look at them and go, you need to step off the line and come back when you're ready to shoot, because you're clearly not ready to shoot.
Sure.
That's how I would handle that.
I think that's a fair approach.
You know, because there is nothing in the rules that allows you to say, on the next one, if you do it, I'm going to give you a procedural. You can't do that.
Yeah.
But you can do exactly this. You don't look like you're prepared. Please come back when you're prepared.
Yep.
So I think that would be the most prudent way of handling a situation like that.
Sure.
And don't get me wrong. I think there's a lot of people have a lot of different views. I mean, I see some people get up there and, you know, in fact, this happened at a match not too long ago. A person shooting PCC, they get up there, they unbag their gun, they stick their big stick in, and they're down at low ready. And I'm expecting them to, you know, maybe target a... Nope, they were ready. No messing around. Oh, sorry, yeah. Okay. Are you ready? Stand by, beep. Shoot five at low ready. They're ready to go. I mean,
it
was probably the fastest I've ever run somebody because there was nothing in between.
Yeah.
And then there are other people that, you know, they're going through their strings three, four, five times. They do a bunch of draws. They're fiddling with their feet. You're allowed a minute. The rules state you're allowed a minute to make ready.
So what happens if you take a minute and 3 seconds?
A minute and 3 seconds is probably very difficult for an RO to determine. Because you're not on a stopwatch.
Right.
Okay? But if you're taking a considerable amount of time, I again would say you do not look like you're ready to shoot this course of fire. Please step off the line and come back when you're ready.
So there's no penalty per se.
No,
in that scenario. Okay.
No, there's nothing that I know of in the rules that would allow you to apply a penalty. It is clearly and there's a good point to be made there. It's 1 minute to make ready. You don't get 1 minute for each string. Like, if you take another 30 seconds after your first string to go through and do the same thing, I'm going to say the same thing as an RO. You're clearly not ready. That is not appropriate to take that much time. You know, again, and it's so funny because I've seen this happen with people who are fantastic shooters. And in my estimation, they're not helping themselves. They already know how to shoot.
Yeah.
So, but it's difficult. And, you know, as a shooter, you want to do the best you can do. And I think a lot of people believe that all that extra warm up and movement and all that matters. I have a slightly different view. It's my view. It's adapted from stuff I listened to by Lanny Basham, which is, if I do that and things are not right, I'm putting garbage into my mind. I'm putting doubt into my mind that I'm not ready.
That's 100%.
You know, and if it's on, well, it should be on. Because I'm ready. So, and of course, you could turn that around and look at it a different way, and that would be your opinion, and that's fine. I know from a match director perspective, you will eventually, the person that is taking, upwards of a minute or more on their make ready, and then, 20 to 30 seconds in between strings, you end up hearing about it from the squad. They'll
Oh,
come
yeah.
up to you and say, "Oh my God." And they're not necessarily directly complaining. They just tend to use that adage of, "Have you seen so and so?" And they're, they take forever. Oh my Lord, that kind of stuff. So, but everybody's got their own procedure. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that when it's long, people really notice. Okay, the next one has to do with procedural errors. And I think the biggest clarity here is that most of it was just adding a couple rules or a couple words to clarify it. I think the thing that people need to understand is in this game, there is no double jeopardy. So if you say are in, you're shooting outer limits, and for sake of argument, let's say you're not 100% sure how to shoot the stage. So you end up, sh you're standing in the left box and you shoot the left two targets, and then you spin and shoot the rightmost target from the left box.
Sure.
Then you move and you shoot the last two. There's a procedural there in that you shot the box, the target from the wrong box. Okay. Now change it. Well, this would be interesting. Because missing the target, trying to think how I can. Okay, here would be the way to same thing, except you your foot's slightly outside the box. So you're clearly not in the correct shooting position, but you're also in that out of the shooting area. You put it
Sure.
clear, what I'm trying to express here is you can't get two procedurals for the same shot
String.
fired, for the
Yeah.
same shot fired. You can get multiple procedurals for a string
I got you.
based on breaking different procedural rules. So, but you can't get multiple procedures for the same shot. So,
Gotcha.
okay, we're getting close to the end here, everybody. The next one is coaching. And it really, I think they just added some words on that. One thing I've always said is cheering is not coaching. So somebody shoots a great string in the back, clapping, saying, "Way to go, attaboy, attagirl." That's not coaching. Okay. Standing in the back going, "Make sure to grip the gun." Gee, who would say something like that, Steve? That's coaching. And what they've clarified is how the procedure penalties will be applied. And if the coach is a competitor, they will receive a penalty as well. So again, I think they just want to make it clear that in the game, you are not allowed to give any kind of assistance to the shooter while they're under the course of fire. So that's really what I believe is the goal of the coaching rule, is that the competitor is on their own out there doing the shooting. When we had an excellent situation of this at the USPSA match, at the state match. Had a young man come up about 11 years old, and he was shooting our stage. And our stage, no matter where you started, there was a lot of movement. And based on how most people shot it, you were having to go around the front and coming back into a shooting position.
Sure.
And this young gentleman slipped and fell as he was going around the front. Now, I will say this. Amazing muzzle control. Finger was out of the trigger. And, of course, you've been to the WAC. So falling at the WAC sucks to begin with because it's a dirty, place. So it's not like falling on the grass. So he falls. Gun is perfect. You know, he falls. Gun's downrange. Fingers out of the trigger. He stands up. Clears the gun. Puts the gun in his holster. Turns around. And and this all happens in, 5 seconds. And he's visibly ready to cry, which I don't blame him. I mean, he's probably a little hurt. He's embarrassed. He fell. And I was on the timer. I was on the timer. No, I think one of my other RO, because I was a CRO of the stage. So there was another RO on the stage and they just stood there. And we all just looked at him because that's exactly what we should have done because he didn't break any rules. But as ROs, we're not meant to say, keep going. So we're watching him, and he's looking at us, and finally in the back, you hear his mom go, just keep going. And he turned around and reloaded and racked a gun and finished. And everybody on the squad was very impressed with this. I mean, of course, he at that point, he started welling up, and I don't blame him, you know. It's a very, you fall with a gun, that's a scary time. But, the whole point of that story was that the RO said nothing. Again, was the mom, quote-unquote, coaching? No. At that point, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Now, change the situation, bring it into Steel Challenge. Okay? Roundabout. You shoot and you miss the stop plate. And you do the classic, you're looking at the RO, waiting to hear the time. And the RO is doing the right thing and is just standing there staring back at you holding the timer because you've yet to finish the course of fire. And someone yells, you missed the stop plate. And you're like, oh, crap, bang. Your time's going to stink. But technically, that's coaching.
Yep.
So keep that in mind, everybody. I would hate to see anybody get that applied to them because it's really not needed. And of course, I brought up a terrible scenario when we were talking about this in the committee, where let's just say you and I aren't best friends, and you're shooting, and you're about to get close and beat me. And I walk and go, hey, Steve, don't forget to shoot plate 3, that kind of thing, or give you some, don't forget to grip the gun. Is that coaching? I'm not your coach.
That's a good one. Like, oh, hey, make sure you don't miss that plate or something like that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So I think there's still some situational things in there because the rule is not meant to be able to be taken advantage of by a competitor to give someone else a penalty. So something to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't see that much of that type of
No, no.
nonsense anyway, but
Again, it's a very hypothetical, devil's advocate type of comment I'm making there. So, all right. So, next one is just a clarification on finger in the trigger guard when loading, unloading, remedial action, and really they just added or adjusting a part on the firearm. So that's just something to always keep in mind whenever you're doing anything, keep that finger out of the trigger guard. New rule with a clarification that metal piercing, steel core, incendiary, and tracer ammunition, as well as steel jacketed, are not legal in our game. And we get hit with enough frags with lead and brass. We don't need to be hit with frag rounds.
Oh, yeah.
Now this is a new rule, and it's good. I like this one, so I'm going to read it fully. It's not that long. Ammunition declared unsafe by a range official due to multiple squibs shall not subject the competitor to disqualification, unless the competitor continues to use said ammunition after a range official has declared it unsafe. So I
Wow.
think that just really clears up the fact that, hey, stuff happens and we're going to tell you that ammo is no longer good, but that doesn't disqualify you from at that point. If you keep using it, it will. And that's just a safety thing. Again, the reclarification on a rule regarding remedial actions. Looks like they redefined prohibited substances to impairment. And again, added some different wording with regards to they instead of calling out alcoholic, non-prescription, non-essential, they retermed it as any substance, legal or otherwise, which may impair performance. And so that's just again, I shouldn't have drank all that cough syrup this morning.
I didn't see the Wow.
Same thing on the next one, and now we're on the last page. Looks clarification on handling a firearm. We've got a new definition for race holster, which just really clarifies exactly what a race holster is. And then in the appendixes, we've got the max distance for the handgun with regards to the new belt rule. Same thing with handgun and mags, which is changed from the length of an overlay to a width of an overlay. And I believe that would be in open. And then there's a magazine measurement appendix. But also, for those that don't know, the production division is now 15 round legal. So they've made that adjustment that,
That's good, I think.
yeah. I've personally always been of the opinion that the mag rules in Steel Challenge don't have the same weight as they do in USPSA.
Right.
You could look at it and go, well, if I can load my mag up, my gun's a little heavier. There is that. But there's no competitive advantage to having more rounds in your gun.
The only thing that helps you is if you're a new shooter and you met Pendulum for the first time, but outside of that,
So wait,
it's
have you ever done this one, Steve? Bang, miss, bang, miss, bang, and then it's going on, and you finally look at them and go, just shoot the stop plate. Just please, just shoot the stop plate, take the penalties. Because poor people, the pendulum can definitely be demoralizing.
Yeah, especially if you start shooting center fire and you start shooting, Oh no, I it wasn't that long ago when I was shooting my Glock 17L going bang, ting, bang, shoot, bang, expletive. Yeah, it's that's before I met Jeff and gripping the gun, so
Yeah. Well,
that's pretty funny.
it's funny too, and I'm glad you brought that grip comment back up. I was flipping around YouTube the other day, and there's a video by Ben Stoger. And you know what? I'm gonna let people make their own decision on how they feel about Stoger. But to me, it doesn't matter where the information comes. If it's good information, it's good information. And this video happened to have some good information. And he was talking about grip. And he was saying, effectively, your grip doesn't have to be a death grip. In fact, a death grip can actually be detrimental, to some people, because you get into that, your muscles start shaking. Your grip should be appropriate to bring the sights back to a predictable position.
Right.
And I like the way he termed that, because that doesn't tell you have to have a weak grip, you have to have a strong grip, you have to use an opposable grip, you have to have a classic grip. It just says you've got to figure out for yourself what's going to do that. Now, for most people, it's not maybe quite the Adam Reno death grip. I come off and my hands are marked for life with Steve Foster aggressive grips marks on them. But you get my point, is that you've got to find it. Because I've had some students that are like, I'm gripping the gun so hard it's shaking. I'm like, okay, you are gripping it too hard at that point. So yes, you must grip the gun, because let's face it, you and I, most people could go out there with a very loose grip, with a dot gun, say a rimfire pistol optic, with a very loose grip, and press the trigger and probably hit the plate.
Yeah.
Because there is a little bit of recoil in rimfire, but not as much as center fire for sure. But am I going to be able to transition the gun to the next stage, to the next plate, and still do that in a quick fashion? And the answer is
Yeah.
no.
Yeah, it's all about speed.
So.
I will share back to the Ben. So I think it was 2016 or 2017. Dave Savigny put on a pro-am at South River Gun Club, and Ben was doing a class, and I still think that Dave Savigny's probably the best iron sight center fire pistol shooter I've ever seen. But man, he had Ben come through and shoot the stages to set the par times. That guy, Ben, can shoot a gun. Holy
Oh,
cow. It was
there's
just
no doubt about it. Again, yeah.
him and Dave both. I mean, it was just there's others that are in the sport, but in USPSA to see, two of the top shooters, not taking away from any of the other top iron sight shooters that are out there today. But boy, when I saw Ben and Dave both shoot, and I've shot with Dave quite a bit more, but I did see Ben shoot. It's amazing at the skill level that we're talking about. It's unlike, if you haven't seen somebody like that shoot before, it's and I know a lot of people look at, some of us like, oh my gosh, how do you do that? But you're talking, these are people that have won the world shoot in USPSA. You're talking the best in the world. But boy, when people like that say something, it's time to listen.
Well,
I'm just saying.
again, good information is good information regardless of where it comes from. So that's why I wanted to share that, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I've started to use that exact terminology in my classes, because it's important to get people to understand that it's not, it may be a death grip if that works for you. Okay. But it's clearly, if the gun, if you're having trouble transitioning to the next plate and not having the sights on target, that would be a definition of not having the correct grip because the sights are not coming back into a predictable position.
And there's another way to tell if you're gripping the gun too hard is if you have a challenge drinking your morning beverage in the morning, you know, by being able to hold it, you probably gripped the gun too hard the night before.
If your hand suddenly looks like a claw, and I cannot straighten, that would be it. So, all right, Steve. Well, listen, it's 8 o'clock. You have to go to work. I don't. I'm retired, so this is my job. We didn't talk about the home range yet, so I got to get that shot in there. So, yeah, this has been a good one. Thanks for being on and of course having this. I think hopefully this brought some information to people. The fact that you didn't know there were rule changes, hopefully if one person listening to this didn't know. Oh, by the way, all these rule changes are available on the Steel Challenge website. If you get logged in, go to member resources, go under rules. There is a link there called change log, and you can see the exact changes that we just went over, and then there's a full set of rules where they've been incorporated into the full rule book.
And also, well, thank you, Jeff, number one, for going through that. I really appreciate it. Definitely helpful, and I think everybody that's listening did learn something. So that's good. The other thing that I saw, I don't have the detail, but I saw on Frank Rizzi's, he's the Area 7. I apologize. I think it's Area 7.
I believe it is Area 7, yes.
Director, he for USPSA, which of course Steel Challenge was a part of, he posted out on his Instagram that they're taking applications if you want to be a part of a committee to look at, to review, and make recommended changes for the bylaws for USPSA. So I was going to check that out today. So if you're interested and have a lot of passion towards bylaws for USPSA, which I think there's definitely a lot more USPSA shooters that have more passion. You know, in the Steel Challenge world, we try to stay out of the fray, but there's a lot of passion around bylaws and bylaw changes. So if you're interested, I recommend you go check that out. At least that's what I saw last night. I'm gonna check it out today.
Cool. Yeah, I will raise one other thing too. And there's the board is now doing a broadcast of the board
Minutes
meetings.
or
Well, the
yeah,
board
the meeting.
meetings.
Yep.
The
Yep. The
meetings.
meeting. Yep.
So the first one was video, the second one was more audio, but it was live simulcast, whatever you want to call it. And so there is some. They're looking at the bylaws to determine what the meeting minute, how long, there used to be when before the board meetings were broadcast, that the meeting minutes were needed to be posted in a certain amount of time. That's they're evaluating a change in that time, because the meetings are being live broadcast.
Sure.
And I'm pretty sure there are people who are actually recording the meetings as well. That doesn't mean the meeting minutes shouldn't be done. They're not saying that. They're just looking at changing, what is the time frame for getting them posted.
Right.
But I've listened, I watched the first one and listened to the second one. And if you're interested at all in the inner workings of what's going on, I highly recommend you join the next one. Steel Challenge does get talked about. Zach is the director of Steel Challenge, and he does have things that we bring up, and reports that he'll make regarding, where we are with, say, the World Speed Shoot. At the last meeting, there was a motion raised to hand off the investigation of adding limited optics to the Steel Challenge committee. And that was approved by all area directors. So that is something that has been now charged to the Steel Challenge committee to do the work and find out should limited optics be added as a new division. So that's something we're working on. And for those that don't know, the NROI is coming up with a steel challenge only range officer course.
That's cool.
So, and we were challenged with coming up with some test questions. So we've started working on that. So, again, anyone who's ever said, gee, I'd love to be a range officer, but I only shoot steel challenge and I really don't have an interest in learning the USPSA rules, here's going to be your opportunity to get that NROI range officer certification specifically for steel challenge.
Sweet.
Thought I lost you there for a minute. I was like, Steve,
Nope.
you weren't, I didn't
Nope.
hear any crashing, so there's no accident.
Not yet.
All right, dude. Well, you know me, I could talk to you all day. I enjoy having our conversations, but I know you got to get to work, and quite frankly, I got to have some breakfast. So,
Sounds good. It was good talking with you today, Jeff.
same here. And you know what? I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna give the special announcement at the end of it this week. So for those interested, go to rangestore.net, use the coupon code STPODCAST10 for 10% off any of your rangestore.net needs.
Thanks,
How'd I
Jeff.
do?
Have a good day.
How'd I do? Did I do that good?
It
I'm trying
was good.
seven, maybe 8 out of 10. Okay, that's all I got. You know what? I've always been that one notch behind you in everything I do. So we'll talk to later.
Besides when it comes to retirement, Jeff.
Yeah, okay, I did beat you there, but then again,
You did.
I am older too.
All right, we'll see you.
Bye-bye, Steve.